Good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 139 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, in touch with the LGBT community and our straight allies. That has been rewritten for tonight. I found out in the mainstream media today that the homosexual agenda again changed without bothering to inform me, its leader. In any case, the homosexual agenda is now that we shall not talk about gay marriage. We will back off that, and we will begin talking about our straight allies, which is, of course, fine with me. I love our straight allies. We've had so many on the show, and they've been delightful. But now that there has been a change in the homosexual agenda, I will indeed honor that and follow it with all my heart. So again, welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 139 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, in touch with the LGBT community and the straight allies that are backing us up, and no mention of marriage. Strictly Confidential is found exclusively on listener-supported head-on radio network. We are brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's CRMW.net. Stop by CRMW.net and see what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Thursday, May the 1st, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m., about 9.02 p.m., Eastern Time, on a Thursday evening, which is May the 1st, also the National Day of Prayer, I might point out, 2008, you're indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to phone in and join in the discussion. I'll be telling you ways to do that in just a moment. If you're listening to one of our podcasts, as so many of the listeners do, so that it fits their own schedules, we welcome you anyway, and thank you for participating in any way you like. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests, as well as to audio archives from the past shows, as well as to the chat room. Tonight is a good night to join the chat room. They're posting disco balls and talking about Lord knows what. You'll find links at strictlyconfidentialradio.com also for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music you hear on the show. You'll also find there links to Head On Radio Network's main site, and you can find out about all the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, as well as you'll locate a PayPal button to make it easier for you to support the Head On Radio Network. The toll-free line is 877 the number 4 head on. That translates into 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, please use that. You'll save the studio a nickel or a buck. That's area code 304-658-3333. Rings in West Virginia. Again, that's 304-658-3333. Email arrives to Peter at Head On Radio Network, and I do try to check that during the breaks. And where do we begin? What a day. Got to tell you, I woke up this morning fairly early. I think it was around, well, fairly early for me. It was about 6, quarter to 6. I woke up with a feeling of almost dread. I had a heavy heart. The reason is because I knew that at some point today I had to find out about the George Bush presidential bookshelf that was going to be built at Southern Methodist University along with a think tank to further polish his image and promote the same agenda under the banner of the good name of the Methodist Church. It was early, so I began Googling news resources to find out if anything had come from the conference. It was to be voted on. As I have told you for months now, the mainstream media has reported that it's a done deal. They're having design contests. The architect has been chosen. Yes, it's a done deal. And there have been little snide remarks in the mainstream media about the liberal professors, and some of the liberal students are not happy about having the George Bush Library there, but that they would indeed just get over it. The partisan think tank, of course, would have absolutely no oversight from the Methodist Church. I take that back. I believe the Methodist Church is allowed to have one member on the board of the think tank. And, of course, one member from the university versus all the right-wing staff that would be appointed to that position, well-heeled, high-moneyed right-wing staff, means, of course, that the Methodist Church would have no influence whatsoever as to the policy and the think tank that went along with the university. For months now, the university has, it's still there. I stopped by Southern Methodist University's website. If you'd like to take a peek, it's smu.edu. If you go to Southern Methodist University site, take a peek now, it's still up, smu.edu. A nice full-color high-res picture right there on the homepage. SMU, home of the George W. Bush Presidential Library. Yes, my friends, even at 9 p.m. in the evening, the Southern Methodist University's website is fully supporting and fully promoting and fully advertising and is fully excited about having the George W. Bush Presidential Library housed there. But I suggest to you that there's a great deal of control over this website. In fact, there is so much control that they are indeed reluctant to take down the banner. What a huge embarrassment! All of the moneyed people who are running the university at keeping it from the faculty, keeping it from the students since 2002, I believe it was. Research showed us that Dick Cheney had indeed planned the library at the Southern Methodist University going all the way back to 2002 in secret talks. It was all well-oiled. It was a done deal. The students, the faculty, the church was never, ever intended to vote on this or have any involvement on this. It was simply, as every other Bush regime dictate, it happened in secret behind closed doors. We're very familiar with that around here. Nonetheless, I couldn't find a word of news this morning about the George W. Bush Library. I did find one news report from a nameless source, still breathless, that it was a new news article was released early this morning, still breathless that the university would be housing the George W. Bush Library. And at that point, I knew that to find out what was going on, I would have to phone Andrew Weaver. Andrew Weaver has been on the show before. He is a Ph.D. and a reverend with the United Methodist Church. He's has a doctorate in psychology. It is Andrew Weaver who began the petition to protest the university's housing of this man's, I can't say those words. This man, I'll just have to use this man's library. My Lord, I am so holding back from what I really, really think. Email me. I'll tell you what I really, really think. In any case, I waited till an appropriate hour. Andrew Weaver lives in New York, and I decided since we're in the same time zone, I'd wait till about 9:20, maybe 9:30 to phone Andrew Weaver. Still, there was nothing in the media, nothing under Google News, nothing under the sites that I could locate that gave any clue about what was going on at the General Conference, which is taking place as we speak in Fort Worth. I called Andrew. He answered his phone. I said, "Hi, Andrew. It's Peter, Strictly Confidential Radio." And, of course, he said hello. He remembers us. He knows us from having been on the show. He spent a couple of hours with us. And I said, "Andrew, I have been afraid to call you today." He said, "Well, why?" And I said, well, Andrew, I can't find a word about the presidential library. I know they were voting on it down there at the conference, and I've come to expect the worst, and so I've been putting. In fact, I told Andrew I had picked up the phone several times during the course of the morning, and dialed in his telephone number except for the last digit and hung up, just not wanting to hear that son of a bitch had indeed swayed the voters at the conference to his liking. The Methodist Church is still putting off doing anything about gay marriage. That's got put off for four more years at the conference, I believe, four more years. I mean, there's a thousand other things going on in the church, but this is the fatal issue. This is the fatal blow that will kill any credibility for the United States, for the United Methodist Church indefinitely. a laughing stock, if you will. This was the death blow, and I expected to hear it. Andrew chuckled, and he told me that it was rejected. It was rejected Wednesday morning at the Quadrennial General Conference of the United Methodist Church that is still meeting in Fort Worth, Texas. It is the highest body, the highest authority of the denomination, and it cannot be overruled by any other body within the denomination. The vote was on this statement: I hereby petition the United Methodist Church General Conference to prevent leasing, selling, or otherwise participating in or supporting the Presidential Library for George W. Bush at Southern Methodist University. Imagine my shock when Andrew told me this morning over the phone that the library was rejected by 844 to 20. 20 people in that conference wanted to go through with that project. 844 rejected it. I honestly have to tell you, tears came to my eyes. And I told Andrew that he had told me, that he had wept earlier this morning over the news. You can't imagine the impact of having gone to a particular congregation since you're a little boy and having it tainted. It was really something. The final death blow formally will be done in July. It is now being turned over to the South Central Jurisdiction of the United Methodist Church, which is actually owns the land that the library is going to be built on or would have been built on. Now, that's about 290 people. And of those 290 people who are going to vote, a great many of them, if not most of them, voted in the general conference. I would think the percentage, well, let's just say that the Bush Library is dead at the Southern Methodist University. That many people at a general conference, 844 to 20, simply cannot be ignored, regardless of the fact that the Southern Methodist University at smu.edu still has the proud home of George W. Bush's Presidential Library still up on their homepage. Andrew and I talked about various things that regarding the conference, and Andrew will in fact be joining us tomorrow evening. I'm looking forward to it. Andrew Weaver will join us at 9 p.m. tomorrow, and he'll be telling us about the inside story, what went on at the conference, about the general feeling in the church at this point in time. Andrew has worked this issue from the very beginning. He was the one who started the petition that so many of you listeners have actually signed along with myself and so many others. I believe he has well over 12,000 signatures amongst them, bishops and ministers and various clergy people, staff, church members, the whole bit. SMU Bush Presidential Library rejected. Rejected. 844 to 20. I don't think there's a whole damn lot that the Bush machine can do about this, frankly, except eliminate 844 people. One wonders how the Hannitys and the O'Reillys and the Limbaughs are going to spin this outright rejection from the liberals in the university. I assume that there will be some wrangling. Example, there'll probably be legal procedures that do the people who attend that conference actually have a right to vote on an issue like this? Oh, yes, they have the right to vote. But do they have the right to vote on issues regarding property? There will be many splitting hairs. There'll be much wailing and gnashing of teeth. You can be quite sure the Bush legal team will be on it. You can be quite sure the IRD is on it. The IRD is responsible for perverting the hierarchy of the church in the first place. You can be sure pressure will be applied to the Southern Methodist Church and the university from every possible angle from now until July. Nonetheless, how in the hell do you reject the fact that 844 people, praise God, voted against the George W. Bush Library verses 20 who wanted it there. I couldn't be happier. And I couldn't be happier even though gay marriage was tabled another 4 years. Hell, I've never been able to get married anyway. I mean, what difference does it make to me? I go to Massachusetts to get married. And that's something the Methodist Church will eventually work out. But not the permanent stink of the George Bush Library at Southern Methodist University. By the way, the Southern Methodist University is located in a very, very, very wealthy portion of Fort Worth. Also, I've just Lord have mercy. Thank you. So anyway, it's been a joyful morning. In fact, it wasn't until late afternoon that I even came across any news. Of course, the people are finding out about it, and I am thrilled. I'm thrilled, and I hope it reaches CBS and NBC and ABC and the whole bit. And it may have. I don't know. I gave up television a while back. I couldn't take it anymore. I began screaming at it so loud it scared doggy. So I simply buried it. I put it away. And I use the Internet exclusively for news. Just couldn't take it anymore. But thank you, Andrew Weaver, Ph.D., clinical psychologist from New York, for making my day. You certainly did, and I had a better day from that point forward. Just couldn't be happier. So it's like I've been telling you, folks, the voices in the wilderness, Andrew and the folks here at the Horn, saying that no, this is not over, this battle is not over, but I've come to expect the worst, as we all have. And I had that heavy feeling this morning that Andrew would be as sad as I am, or was, or thought I would be. In any case, we'll get the full story tomorrow night. I could not resist bringing you what happened today. That's not something I could keep till tomorrow night. But I've only given you a fraction of it. I've just given you my personal feelings. Andrew will give us the true inside scoop. I found out something today. Interesting. At least it was interesting to me. I had no idea this was the case. I found out something about eHarmony I did not know. Of course, I've seen the ads. Now, you can't go to a website without seeing the eHarmony ads. They will find you a mate for life, and how carefully their applicants are screened, etc., etc., etc. And of course, I was aware from the LGBT blogs and news sources that they will not accept LGBT folks, and I knew that there was some, vaguely in the back of my mind, some lawsuit because they were discriminating, or some long story. But what I found out was, did you know that eHarmony was founded by a 72-year-old Christian self-help author named Neil Clark Warren? Did you know that the site was launched by the courtesy of James Dobson? That's right, Focus on the Family. The site was entirely launched and thrust upon the world by James Dobson's radio show. In fact, the fellow who began the site, the what's his name again? I lost it here. No, I'll come across it. Anyway, that guy, Neil Clark Warren, has said, and I quote, "James Dobson did more to help us get started than any other person on the planet." That's what he told NPR's News in 2005. He says that even though his company has severed ties with Dobson, ha ha ha, he says, "eHarmony has never been limited to a Christian audience or any particular subset of the population." He claims that the website asks 256 questions about personality traits and values, and that with the help of a complex algorithm rolling on the floor laughing, can you say, does this column match that column? Gee, they must have a lot in common. Yeah, that's a complex algorithm. Yeah, tell it to the rubes, honey. In any case, the site has become known as pretty much a Christian website. They try to screen out anyone, of course, who is looks like they've been married more than once. Looks like they are dishonest or have mental health issues. Of course, the mental health issues are in fact things like, are you gay? And I assume some other trick questions. At least they probably trick the sort of person who would log in and go there. Apparently there's another outfit called chemistry.com who believe in love and romance. And the general understanding now is that eHarmony is for squares. And eHarmony spokesperson rejects the fact that we discriminate. The spokesperson says that they do not discriminate against LGBT folks. They just don't accept them. You gotta love that. Oh, my. The only choices are man seeking woman and woman seeking man. A company lawyer explained that eHarmony matches based on a unique scientific research into what makes heterosexual unions work. And it hasn't done that sort of work on gay relationships, although it may do it in the future. Yeah, right. In any case, they've made a ton of money. And so if you'd like to marry someone because they are, in fact, a backwards fundamentalist, just like you, then by all means, head over to eHarmony. I had no idea. It was all wrapped up with focus on the family. And speaking of focus on the family, today is, I know this for a fact, it's on the bulletin board of the outside signs and of every church, at least most of them in the country. It's even on the church sign outside the little church just down the street. Today is the National Day of Prayer. I've always been a little bit offended by it. The National Day of Prayer, the church hauls out its war eagles and its American flags and puts them out into the vestibule, or as some churches call it, the narthex. We have posters, the official National Day of posters to put up, which usually consists of a soldier in uniform. Not that there's anything wrong with a soldier in uniform. This year's poster is a sword and a shield. These are placed next to a muscular young man whose head is bent in prayer. It has the whole military feel to it. In fact, the National Day of Prayer is a wholly owned subsidiary of James Dobson and Focus on the Family. There are people who are beginning to complain about this, about the exclusion. It's a national religion, is what it's actually become. Millions of Americans are going to get together and special observances. They're going to mark the National Day of Prayer. It was actually first inaugurated in Congress back in 1952. I believe it was Truman. And Truman set aside what he called a National Day of Prayer. At the time, it wasn't politicized. It was just a National Day of Prayer that everyone knew that people were praying, what, about the country, about peace in the communities, Lord knows what. But it was a National Day of Prayer, meaning the people within the borders. Now national means something entirely different. It means supporting the war. It means James Dobson. It means family values. It means protect marriage. It means, oh no, no, thou woman shalt submit to thy husband, and thou shalt not use the morning after pill. It means no condoms. It means false research. It means suppression of global warming reports. The National Day of Prayer has become what disgusts all of us. No, I do not fall for the National Day of Prayer, although the church puts up the information, the church puts up the posters. You just about have to. You see, it's the old story about, it sounds so innocent, it's the National Day of Prayer, that if you don't say you support it, then you must be against prayer and you don't love Jesus and you don't support the president. The National Day of Prayer has been hijacked. Now only, and I mean this, only Christian clergy, and I don't mean just any Christian clergy, I mean evangelicals, are invited to participate in any way. It completely undermines the First Amendment's prohibition against establishing a religion. Let me tell you about this. The National Day of Prayer is simply a day set aside by Congress. The drum was beat by Reagan, and the drum wasn't beaten so hard by Clinton. But of course, as soon as George did it, it was to rally the natives. By being just a national day of prayer, it does not have a website. However, Focus on the Family runs the website called National Day of Prayer Task Force. It is the default. It has taken over. It is the self-appointed National Day of Prayer. Let me give you some examples. In fact, I even have an application form. I'm going to read you some of the questions that they ask you on the application just to volunteer to do anything for the National Day. Bob, please run the track called Bush National Day of Prayer. I'd like you to hear the man.
Today is the National Day of Prayer. Here's Ravi Zacharias, the 2008 National Day of Prayer Honorary Chairman.
Holy Father, in a world where so many are hungry, you have given us food in abundance. In a world where so many are hurting, you offer to bind up our wounds. In a world where so many are lonely, you offer friendship to every heart. In a world longing for peace, you offer that hope. Yet, we are so stubborn and resistant. Have mercy upon us. We as a nation are at the crossroads this year, Lord. Please give us the guidance to elect one who will honor you and respond to the wisdom from above, so that our hope may be renewed and our blessings be treasured. In your holy name. Amen.
Today at noon, wherever you are, join us in saying this prayer together. The National Day of Prayer.
Okay, what you heard there was actually Ravi Zacharias, rather than Bush. Ravi Zacharias is one of the, in fact, he's the head evangelical in charge of the celebrations this year. And by the way, these prayer meetings are held anywhere they can get close to a public building, close to the Capitol, on the church school steps, on the courtroom steps, anywhere where they can insinuate themselves into the national agenda. Bob, let's try again for the Bush track, please. It's called Bush National Day of Prayer.
Here's the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
The scriptures say, the Lord is near to all who call on Him. Calling on God in prayer brings us nearer to each other. Prayer teaches humility. We find that the plan of the Creator is sometimes very different from our own. Yet we learn to depend on His loving will, bowing to purposes we don't always understand. Prayer can lead to a grateful heart, turning our minds to all the gifts of life and to the great works of God.
From the Capitol steps to our Ivy League universities, many of our presidents have called the nation to pray. On the first Thursday in May, our nation observes the National Day of Prayer. Log on to nationaldayofprayer.org to find an event where you live.
Okay, there you have the president endorsing the National Day of Prayer. Let's just talk about it again. There was a call to prayer in 1775 when the Continental Congress asked the colonies to pray for wisdom in forming a new nation. Then there was President Lincoln's proclamation of a day of humiliation, fasting, and prayer. That was in 1863. It wasn't until a joint resolution in Congress in 1952 by President Truman that declared an annual National Day of Prayer, not a public holiday, just a National Day of Prayer. In 1988, the law was amended and signed by President Reagan, permanently setting the day as the first Thursday of every May. Ah, the first step to regulate it. So each year, the president signs a proclamation encouraging all Americans to pray. And last year, all 50 state governors, plus the governors of several U.S. territories, signed those proclamations. I must tell you that some of them signed them under protest and threats by the American Family Association. You see, this National Day of Prayer was to cross any religious boundaries. It was to be inclusive, regardless of your religion. regardless of how you prayed or who you prayed to. It was a national day of prayer simply to ask for guidance in this country. But that has all gone away very quickly. Let me give you some examples here. Jews are excluded, Buddhists, atheists, of course, all Christians except for the right-wing fundamentalists. Here's some examples of questions. Have you ever been convicted of a felony? Who is your local church? What is the name of the pastor? What is his phone number? You have to write an essay question. You have to make a statement of your Christian testimony. That's rather difficult for a Jew to do, or anyone else who would like to enter in the National Day of Prayer. Here are the volunteer qualifications. 1, a commitment to Christ. A volunteer must be an evangelical Christian. Gee, that excludes me. You remember the evangelical Christians believe only in the literal interpretation of the Bible. A volunteer must be an evangelical Christian who has a personal relationship with Christ. You have to sign this. I acknowledge that I am working for the Lord Jesus Christ and the furthering of his work on earth, and agree to perform my work with the highest standards of the Christian faith. Sounds a little exclusive to me. 2, commitment to the local church. The church should be your first priority in a ministry. We ask for volunteers not to support the National Day of Prayer until their obligations to the local church have been met. This is so you don't upset the local pastors with taking their tithes, their sheep stealing. Commitment to the National Day of Prayer. Our Christian mission is to provide support and resources to participate in or plan events related to the National Day of Prayer. If people of other faiths wish to celebrate in their own tradition, they should make their own arrangements to do so. Yes, make your own arrangements. It sounds fair, go make your own arrangements, yet this is the one Bush endorses. This is the one the Focus on the Family has a national site, as if they are the people to run, to actually be the cabinet agency that runs the National Day of Prayer. It is to promote the prayers, it is to promote the divisiveness and the wedge issues and the militancy and everything in this country that we've come to despise. There's not a damn thing these people cannot poison, even something as innocently named as the National Day of Prayer. You must sign that you are committed to a Christian lifestyle. The representative must be a representative of Christ in both public and private life, which includes maturity, stability, healthy interpersonal relationships, financial responsibility, and stable living situation. That means you can't be gay. You must commit to teamwork for the National Day of Prayer. You must commit to be a true volunteer. Just amazes me. Above, we have another audio clip there. It's from the National Council of Churches, I believe. And let's see, I think we call that. This is Jane Lampman. She's commenting for the National Council on Churches. Bob, run the Jane Lampman audio, please.
On May 1st, the annual celebration of National Prayer Day will see thousands of events across the country. There will be prayer breakfasts, Bible reading marathons, prayer gatherings at school flagpoles, and on the steps of city halls. Even a fleet of airline pilots will fly and pray over the 50 state capitals. Ever since President Reagan signed a bill making the first Thursday in May National Prayer Day, the observances have mushroomed in number, thanks mostly to the efforts of a national task force to promote and coordinate events. This year, though, that task force has come under fire. Jewish and interfaith groups are challenging the religiously exclusive nature of its programs. Those who run the events must sign a belief statement reflecting evangelical Christianity, and they only allow Christian clergy to participate. Yet many events are held on public property and involve elected officials, from mayors to President Bush. The critics are promoting an inclusive prayer day. They're lobbying governors, holding alternative events, and even staging some protests. They say they want to see Americans of various faiths come together to pray for the country, particularly whenever the event is on public territory. This is Jane Lampman with the Christian Science Monitor.
Now, the actual head high honcho isn't James himself, but his wife Shirley. Shirley Dobson is actually the one in charge of the National Day of Prayer and counts all those millions that roll in, pays the people who print the posters with the soldiers to be posted in churches around the country. It is a private group, but nonetheless it gets the unofficial government seal of approval with an annual proclamation by President Bush himself, and prayer ceremonies for the National Day of Prayer are held at the White House and on Capitol Hill. Now, those of you who know me know that I go to a church. That's just my choice. But this really upsets me. This is exactly what we're all warned about, the hijacking of faith. This is just another example of a national religion / theocracy. Now, there's a group of people called Jews on First. Now, they are spearheading what's called an inclusive National Day of Prayer campaign. And that's, they have a website up and trying to get churches to sign on to an inclusive National Day of Prayer. Here's a list of the people who are, short list, I won't read the whole thing, who are actually invited to preach at, they were at the National Day of Prayer in Minnesota. And let's have a look at the types of people. Minister Dan Hall of the Midwest Chaplains, which is an evangelical group. The governor himself has been an evangelical for 20 years. Nothing wrong with being an evangelical, but we all know the word has become tarnished. It means inerrancy. We all know where that goes. There's the lieutenant governor, an evangelical Christian. The former Minnesota governor, also an evangelical Christian. Kathy Jo Severson of the Minnesota Christian Leaders, she spoke. Her group is looking to, and I quote, legislate the kingdom of God. Any hackles go up? Any hair rising on your neck? We have Clarence St. John, who is the superintendent of the Minnesota Assembly of God, which we used to call the Resembly of God, which is also evangelical. Those are, well, no sense in making fun of the way they worship, but there are a lot of people that fall out on the floor in those churches. The governor's advisor on faith, evangelical. Lighthouse Community Church, an evangelical church. Pastor Bob Battle, the Church of God in Christ, evangelical, 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 evangelical. It goes down the list, on and on and on. You cannot get into the National Day of Prayer unless you sign on. No Jews. We don't want no Jews here. We don't want no queers here. This is for straight folks to pray about the what's going on in the country. The homosexuals on the street and the brown people coming over the border and the towel heads blowing up the buildings. My God's better than your God. We're going to take over. I'd like to point out to you that the original National Day of Prayer, and I quote, is to join together as many people as possible of many faiths as possible to pray God show us mercy and love. There are many other quotes that show the perversion of what it was originally created to be and what it's become, which is a national, wholly owned subsidiary of Focus on the Family. Gee, just like eHarmony. You know, it seems to me that Focus on the Family not only wants to decide who you marry using a sophisticated algorithm. Oh, it's sophisticated, yeah. Sophisticated algorithms to tell you who you can marry and gee whiz, a national religion. And they've got a lot of nerve. The National Day of Prayers, the Task Force website, the official statement, here's the official policy. It says, participation of non-Judeo-Christian groups in the National Day of Prayer says that these non-religious groups, see, the Jews and the Buddhists, they're not religious groups. They are non-religious groups. They should organize their own unofficial events. You get that? The official religion? But, you know, what do I know? What do I know? All I know is that the mainstream media has informed me today that I'm not supposed to be talking about gay marriage. The agenda has changed. I'm only supposed to be talking about our straight allies. You know, it's a shift in tactics. What can I tell you? You know, but anyway, I'm happy to talk about our straight allies. By the way, here's some of the events that are taking place. Oh, it's today, by the way. Did I mention it's today? It's May the 1st. It's today. A 90-hour Bible reading marathon on the steps of the Capitol. A prayer in the air event in Ohio where several pilots will fly their planes in a cross formation over the state. A gingerbread cookie drive in North Carolina. You know, it's the little money that comes dribbling in that really adds up, doesn't it? Surely. Cha-ching. Fundagelicals, it's a new term I came across today. I just loved it. It's a fundagelicals. Oh, my. Oh, Lord, I've rambled on for enough. We'll go actually do a little bit of a break here. You know, we have a wonderful DJ this evening. It is Martin Verland. You've heard him once before in the show. He's the DJ from Holland, from the Netherlands. And he does the most amazing mega mixes you have ever heard. He was introduced to us by Alex and Ticken over at Euroflash.net. And we're actually going to do a Martin Verland double feature tonight. Martin has a mega mix that runs about 10 minutes. We're going to use that as a go-to break. And then Martin will also be playing at the gay bar across the street later in the evening with a slightly longer set. This is a brand new set from Martin. By the way, you can find out about Martin at myspace.com/martmix. It's M-A-R-T-M-I-X. myspace.com/martmix. And let's go to break, Bob. It's the one called Italo Disco Reborn. We have Mr. Martin Verland playing Mart Mix.
I'm to the old school Italo Disco Freak.
The latest entry by Martin Verland. Those Dutch DJs don't mess around. In fact, this particular track was part of a contest with CBS, actually. There were many, many DJs in it. I'm not sure the outcome. I don't have that information yet, but I do know that Martin submitted it with the sampling of my voice in it. Oh, bless his heart. Anyway, but Martin's been doing mega mixes since about 95. Some of them are on the radio. There are record companies who release the mixes on CDs. And again, he is at myspace.com, MartMix. And we'll hear him again at the gay bar across the street. You know, since the homosexual agenda has changed, I was just informed of it this morning. Again, I remind you, the mainstream media has let me know that in no uncertain terms, I'm not supposed to talk about gay marriage. I'm only supposed to talk about straight allies. So in honoring that change and tactic as we take over the families and control the hurricanes and direct the weather and eat your rice. Lord have mercy. I can't let the evening go by without, and many of you have already heard the story, but I can't let the evening go by without telling you about one of our straight allies, one of our more prominent straight allies. She's in trouble. It is Miss Dear Abby. And she's become quite controversial because she dared to speak out in support of gay marriage. The Culture and Media Institute, which is, of course, a right-wing outfit, says that Phillips, that's her real name, has rejected traditional morality. She's dispensing radical advice on matters of sexual morality. She is a disciple of the sexual revolution, and basically she says, if it feels good, do it. Well, if that's what she basically said, well, maybe I shouldn't take their word for it. Let's just hear what Dear Abby says in her own words. Bob, please run the Dear Abby track.
I don't know. I guess I just have a sense of fair play. I have some wonderful gay friends, and I think that they should be entitled to all the civil rights that everybody else has, too. As a matter of fact, I believe our Constitution, the Bill of Rights, says something like, we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And if gay people are not allowed to have the full rights that are guaranteed in the country, then doggone it.
Wow. Focus on the Family is going to be on her like, well, white on rice, you know, the rice crops that we destroyed with the hurricanes. Amazing, isn't it? That this has all come to a head, if you'll pardon the pun, because of PFLAG. PFLAG's director, Jody Huckabee, was the perfect choice for a straight equality award. And it's part of a new campaign amongst PFLAG to engage more heterosexual allies. Again, this phrase comes in. She's a mainstream voice, and she was indeed presented with that award. To families and to people with problems and a shoulder to give you good advice. And the other face is evil and is seeking to destroy the family. Just thought I'd let you know that that even though they say that she is saying basically, if it feels good, do it, just wanted you to hear it in her own words. I stopped by Conservapedia again today. I can't resist that every once in a while. The top 10 list, it hasn't changed very much, but I thought I'd read to you or let you know the first sentence of each of these articles so you can get a flavor of how they run. The top 10 search on Conservapedia, homosexuality and health. In regards to homosexuality and health, the homosexual population has a significantly higher incidence of large devastating diseases. I wonder what a large disease is. Number 9. Homosexuality and choice. In respect to the issue of homosexuality and choice, given the existence of ex-homosexuals and given the existence of human cultures where homosexuality has apparently not existed, by the way, this is the longest sentence ever written, comma, the position that homosexuality is ultimately a choice in individuals or at the very least can be a choice in individuals has strong evidential support. Number 8, Adolf Hitler. You know, they're fairly kind to Adolf. They don't seem to have much of an attitude toward Adolf. It's just a casual statement of Adolf Hitler was born the Austrian Chancellor and President of Germany from January 30, 1933 until his death on April 30, 1945. That doesn't seem to blow their skirts up very high, does it? Let's look at number 7, ex-homosexuals. In regard to the question of whether or not homosexuality is a permanent condition, one of the earliest historical records regarding the existence of ex-homosexuals is in a letter written by these sentences are so long, written by the Apostle Paul to the Corinthian church. Paul wrote, and this is the 1 Corinthians verse, where he goes on about neither sexually immoral or idolaters or adulterers nor male prostitutes nor homosexual offenders This is the NIV version, by the way. Not very kind. Nor thieves, nor greedy, or drunkards, or slanderers. It goes on and on and on. And the verse concludes with that you are sanctified and justified in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. It doesn't say anything about them being homosexual. It just says they were sanctified and justified. Doesn't say that they, well, whatever. I'm just reading the news. The theology. Science and interfering with the freedom of association. Number four, Wikipedia. They're hitting Conservapedia to find out more about Wikipedia because Wikipedia, of course, is evil. It is an online encyclopedia founded by blah 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 and Professor blah 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 in 2001. Despite its official neutrality policy, Wikipedia has a strong liberal bias, especially on focal points relating to the culture war, or lack of it. But in any case, though, there's so many wars. There's the war on Easter, the war on Christmas, the war on Christians, the war on culture. My God, we're just so damn busy, we just can't keep up. I think we ought to just cause one big hurricane and wipe them out. Teen homosexuality, number three. Another of the world's longest sentences. It's an important issue given how a person develops and behaves in early life, and it can have profound effects later in life. For example, relevant information about teen homosexuality, causes of homosexuality. It's important to be aware that there's a lot of misinformation and speculation, and it's being offered in the public square, meaning this is the where you're supposed to get your information. Then there's, of course, homosexuality. It's a sexual desire or behavior, nothing about love, mind you. Affection. It is a sexual desire and behavior directed toward a person of one's own sex. Gee, it doesn't even say that it's, if it was directed, it doesn't even say that it's welcome. Oh. And on the site, number one, is the main page of Conservapedia, where there is a huge article today. It is the article of the month, and it's called Atheism: Discover What Wikipedia, the Public School Systems, and the Liberal Media Don't Want You to Know About Atheism. Whatever happened to freedom of religion? Or lack of it? You know, there was a news story that took place earlier this week. We didn't get to it for whatever reason. And it's still bouncing around out there. And it's one I definitely want to tell you about if you haven't heard about it. It's about a school principal for the Hollis Pierce Middle College in Memphis, Tennessee. Well, the woman is obsessed. Her name is Dauphine Beasley. She is the principal. She is obsessed beyond your wildest dreams about public displays of affection. She is beside herself to prevent and stop and track and document and post names and dates of anyone who shows any sign of public affection. Gee whiz, it's okay to be a public hater, huh? It's okay to beat the hell out of people if they have to be different than you, huh? But good God Almighty, the displays of affection, they've got to go. She compiled a list of names, including students, based on information that she forced the teachers to give her. She posted that list in her office, which is clearly visible to anyone who happens to walk in. And of that list of names, she also extracted the names of a gay couple, Andrew and Nicholas. Now, she called Andrew's mother and said that, you know, your son's a homosexual. She wasn't going to put up with it at this public high school. His mother said, I couldn't believe it when I went to meet with the principal, and there was a list hanging right there by her desk. And it's, by the way, hanging on the wall, if I'm not mistaken, so anybody could see it. She says, African-American people face enough obstacles to succeeding in this world, and I want my son to have every opportunity he's worked hard for. Our schools should be helping children, not tearing them down. Of course, this is, as I say, a public high school that runs on taxpayer dollars. One moment, doing a little test here. Yeah, I'm still on. It's run by taxpayer dollars. But in any case, according to Nicholas's mother, the principal says she does not tolerate homosexuality in her school and repeatedly asked her, "Did you know your son was gay? Did you know?" Implying, of course, that she should have never been sent, or the son should have never been sent to the school to begin with. The honor student went further into humiliation. In addition to verbal harassment, when he was taken out of a running for a class trip to New Orleans. The trip was related to the rebuilding efforts in New Orleans, and Nicholas was told that there were fears he would embarrass the school by, get this, engaging in homosexual or inappropriate behavior. That's right. He is one of the top students, never caused any problems. Now he's being verbally harassed and kicked out of a school trip to New Orleans because they were afraid he'd do that queer thing. Good Lord. The parent says the school has no business singling out these boys and taking away educational opportunities simply because they were dating. Lord have mercy. It's that public. Just can't have it. Affection. He says, her son says that we never bothered anyone. We never did a single thing at school that broke any of the rules. And every day they're punishing me. I'm worried about if this is going to affect my chance to get into a good college. The principal's outing of the students to the families, classmates, and teachers is just completely unacceptable, says the ACLU of Tennessee. Way to go. Its only purpose was to intimidate the students. By the way, there just doesn't seem to be. She just didn't seem to do much about the straight couples who were dating. She got their names and put them on the board, but it seemed that she wanted to, rather than just come out and say, Dauphine, that you're going to get these two queers. Why not just say that? But no, we have to put ourselves a little bit undercover by taking a list of all of the people that the teachers would tell you were dating, so that it appears that we are against public displays of affection, when actually, in all reality, you're against something entirely differently. The ACLU has filed an electronic facsimile. It's a matter concerning unauthorized compilation of student names for a list of couples, including, quote, homo couples. She referred to them as homo couples. This is part of the ACLU cease and desist. She says that the ACLU says it's highly disturbing, and it's in violation of both state law and constitutional protection. Nicholas and Andrew and their parents have informed us that in the fall of last year, she demanded over. Here's the detail the news didn't give you, over the school intercom system, that all the teachers and the staff at the Hollis School provide her with the names of all students who are couples, hetero and homo. That's a quote. She said it over the intercom. Hetero and homo. I want the list. It's the ACLU's understanding that the principal then posted the names of all of the alleged couples in her office and used the list to call certain parents and share her personal beliefs and prejudices. She informed the mother of one of the children that she did not like homosexuals, that she found it hard to deal with homosexuals, and she did not want them in her school. My stars. In any case, the ACLU is saying the actions violated Nicholas's and Andrew's legal constitutional rights, not limited to the right to equal protection. It's a fairly lengthy document, as you might imagine, being a legal document from the ACLU. But the list of demands is very short. We demand the Board of Commissioners and the School District 1 implement effective policies to prevent these types of acts from occurring. Compensate Andrew and Nicholas for the harm they've suffered. Reprimand Principal Beasley for her unwarranted and unlawful actions. Remove any reference of such allegations in the records pertaining to Andrew and Nicholas. And five, issue an apology to Andrew and Nicholas and all others on the list. Way to go. Some more references here from the ACLU. Let's see. I haven't given up the phone number in a while. It's toll-free. 877, the number 4, head-on. That translates into 877-443-2366. Or if you have unlimited long distance, you can use 304-658-3333. Rings in West Virginia. If you'd like to contact us and participate via email, you're welcome to do it. It's Peter at headonradionetwork.com. Along those same lines, there's a case in Fayetteville, Arkansas. A family has sued a high school bully and may soon sue the school district over a prolonged and dangerous pattern of bullying directed against a 15-year-old boy. And by the way, I saw a video of the parent with this child. Now, this child is not at all effeminate. He's a nice-looking, tall fellow. A very deep, masculine voice. Obviously, he wasn't putting on. I mean, you can just tell. Did not have any of the standard gay genes. Somehow or another, they found out about it. Let's see how they found out about it. And so it's not because he doesn't present in the gender pattern that they wish him to present in. And we'll go on about the litigation. The school district left the family very few choices other than litigation. After the son was repeatedly attacked as a type of collective sport for bullies in the high school. The school officials just seem remarkably blasé and passive and unsympathetic as a result of his injuries. You see, at some point, the high school bullies decided that Billy was the designated victim. He was the designated homosexual at the school. They're going to find him one. And they made a type of sport. You see, it was a game. Who could do it more? Punches, ridicule. There was a video shot by some of the boys on cell phones that showed how arbitrary the attacks would be. On the video, one of the boys announced he was going to beat up Billy Wolf in front of his younger sister, then suddenly walks up and punches him. This appears to be the life that Billy has had to live with while trying to learn. The beatings were triggered years ago after Billy mentioned to his mom that a kid had called him teasing him about buying a certain sex toy. Now imagine the little kid said, "You got a dildo or some rigmarole," and the kid was teasing him. And so mom called the boy's parents. And so the next day at school, the boy showed Billy a list of 20 names who had signed up to beat the hell out of him. One attack occurred in the bathroom. In another, it happened at shop class. A boy walked up and sucker punched him so hard he had to go to the hospital and stitch up his cheek. And what's really bizarre here is that even in the face of all of these evidentiary videos, the school suspended Billy. Not the bullying. The bullying extended to the internet. There was the article says it's disturbingly like another case that where a teenager committed suicide. There was a Facebook page called "Everyone That Hates Billy Wolf," and there's no one that anyone should like Billy. He's a little bitch, and he's a homosexual, and no one likes him. And so the boys had him listed as the designated homosexual in the school. It's not the first lawsuit, by the way, in Fayetteville about bullying. The district was previously sued after a student was savagely beaten for being gay. Imagine that. Parents in other school districts have also turned to the courts to force educators to take action and not simply treat bullying as a part of growing up. You know, it makes the straight boys braver to be able to beat on the queers, and it makes the queers tougher to get beat on, so it's just nature, just part of growing up. One obvious measure is to expel the bullies. In one case, a Kansas boy was harassed and bullied for being gay. He wasn't, by the way. Wasn't even gay. He resulted in a $250,000 award. Such lawsuits force educators to act. You have to threaten. You have to threaten with their jobs, and because they keep taking the victims out of school. They keep getting suspended and leaving the bullies there, which tells the bullies, next, next. Lord have mercy. Reminds me of our conversation last evening with Scott Hall, and the fact that the bullying bill has passed in Florida. Thank goodness for that. It's a safer place in Florida for the kids. I'm looking through my stacks of paper. Let's talk about lesbians in Africa. They're too frightened to picket or protest outside of a trial of 9 men who stand accused of beating 19-year-old Zawoski to death more than 2 years ago. It was a brutal attack, apparently motivated by the fact that she was living openly as a lesbian. It was on February 3rd, 2006. A mob of 20 men beat her to death. 9 of the attackers appeared at the court, but the case was postponed because one of the accused lawyers was not present in court. Black lesbians are often victimized in Africa. There are stories that I have come across and not even presented because they're too graphically brutal. You remember we did cover one of those called corrective rape. This is a divine right of young men and even adult men to rape lesbians because it will turn them straight. It is their duty, you see, to rape them so that they will become straight. And I assumed that this woman had been raped, but it didn't work, so now it's time to kill her. I mean, you know, what do you expect from a country where the saucers are arrested for stealing your penis? Sorry. Ignorance isn't always bliss, is it? Ah, yes, and speaking of fundamentalists, don't you just love them? Doesn't matter what flavor they are. Doesn't matter if they're Christians or, hey, is there any such thing as a Buddhist fundamentalist? Or a Hindu fundamentalist? I often wonder. We have, but in any case, we've got some Jewish fundamentalists who did a bad thing. It is a private Jewish girls' school in Melbourne. And apparently the principal has been molesting the little girls. It's the Addis Israel Girls' School in Elsternwick. Now, the school paid the mother of 8, the principal is a mother of 8, to return to Israel before they reported the complaints to the police. She escaped 24 hours before the investigation started. You see, the Addis community is a small, ultra-Orthodox group of about 150 families in a closed region. They have little contact with the wider Jewish community and non-Jewish society. Imagine that. Some may be a little bit repressed sexually. It's believed from the complaints that the woman, the principal of the Jewish girls' school, she molested girls 15 to 16 years old. The school is refusing phone calls. The spokesperson for the police department said he was aware of the claims but could not confirm there was an investigation going on. He didn't want to talk about it because of the age of the kids. Said in a school where kids don't have much exposure to the outside world, there is a possibility of vulnerability that you may not have the same street wisdom to recognize what's going on. One victim had attempted suicide because of the multiple molesting. One of the ways the principal did it, she'd share her bed with different students when her rabbi husband was away. Imagine that. She would tell the students she was scared, although she was in the home with 5 children aged 5 to 12. Even though she was home with her children, she would tell the students that she was afraid and get them to sleep in the bed with her. Also, the woman also went on all the school trips, all the school camps. For 5 or 6 years she did that, and She would always stay an extra night with two or three girls to clean up. Well, I imagine she did. One of the parents said the problems emerged a year ago when the daughter, who's 16, stopped eating and became unsociable. They took her to a psychologist who finally got it out of her what was going on. Now, the woman is believed to be in her late 40s, and she was handpicked in Israel to teach girls' school 8 years ago. Not because of her teaching ability, you're going to love this class, not because of her teaching ability, but for her ultra-Orthodox beliefs. Oh, now, that's a good reason. That's a good reason to put your little girls in charge of a molester. Because of their ultra-Orthodox beliefs. That means you're not just good, you're very, very, very good. The parents regarded her as the second holiest person in the community. You see how the fundamentals work? You get to rank by holiest. Who's the holiest? She was the second holiest person behind the rabbi. The parents are furious about the way the school is handling it. She fled the country with as much as $100,000. It was borrowed from a family within the community who did not know. 2 days before she took off to Israel, she also took about $20,000 from a pool of money earned from the students' part-time jobs. Students have been referred to a school-nominated psychologist. Yep, another one of them fundamentalist stories. Boy, I got a million of them, folks. Got a million of them. This is an example of the way CNN reports the news. It's such a clever little twist on this sentence. Okay, let's see, checking in with Bob. I'm modulating Bob. I can't do anything about it. So anyway, some critics are saying that global warming is a form of religion for a liberal environmental activist. And here's where they slip the meaning. The meaning gets changed right here. It says it's a religion for the liberal environmental activist. Indeed, in her official statement of the day, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi invoked God and the Bible, her official statement on Earth Day. So you see, this is a way of cleverly saying that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is one of those pagan religion environmental type people. She worships the sun god, you know. Some critics say global warming is a form of religion for liberal environmental activists. Indeed, her official statement on Earth Day, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi invoked both God and the Bible. Now, what she said was almost four decades ago, a group of visionary Americans energized the environmental movement and our nation by dedicating a day to this ideal, Earth Day. And then she made the mistake of saying, we must preserve God's creation, our planet, for generations to come. Imagine that. So now CNN gets to say that some critics say global warming is a form of religion for a liberal environmental activist. So when you read the article, you just think that it's about the fact that Nancy Pelosi is a liberal environmental activist, and for her, hugging trees is part of her religion. There are several other sentences within the article that pulls the same little twist. Let's see here. Here's one from Singapore. A Singapore television station has been fined for airing a show that depicted a gay couple and their baby in a way that promotes a gay lifestyle. The media regulator said. The Media Development Authority fined Mediacorp TV, Channel 5, $11,000, said in a statement on its website. The situation aired an episode of a home decor series called Find and Design. It featured a gay couple wanting to transform the game room to a new nursery for an adopted baby. But, oh, boy, that sent the Media Development Authority through the roof. How dare them, they say, present themselves as a family unit which normalizes their gay lifestyle and their family setup. It was a breach of rules. You are not free to air that television programming, they wrote to Channel 5. And earlier this month, the authorities fined a cable operator, StarHub Cablevision. They fined... This has all happened since September the 7th of last year. This has all happened since... Gremlins seem to be among us this evening. I show connected, yet there was no audio up there. And so anyway, you missed a great story. Let's see about rice. and the LGBT folks eating all the rice and causing food shortages. Let's see, where shall we go next? Growing up in Jamaica. Now, I bring up the growing up in Jamaica story because, in fact, England has come up with a new regulation. Peers have made an amendment to the Criminal Justice Bill that will protect freedom of speech in England. The freedom of speech that they are protecting is comic books that make fun of LGBT folks, rap artists who encourage us that were murdered, and also to those who criticize other people's sexuality. They're opening that up, the criminal justice bill. The amendment said that it would be an offense to incite hatred, but it would not be an offense to criticize people on the basis of sexuality. The move is welcomed overwhelmingly by rap artists who will now have the freedom to write homophobic lyrics without having a single legal action taken against them. Religious groups are also going to welcome the amendment. Well, of course, they always welcome anything that allows the hate speech. The bill, they saw it as being persecuted for talking about the crime of homosexuality. It was passed 81 to 57. The culture secretary said that every single day in this civilized country of ours, people are abused and attacked and have hatred expressed against them and suffer extreme violence. He says that in my book, incitement to hatred on the grounds of sexual orientation is unforgivable. It's unacceptable in a civilized society based on the grounds of race or color. However, the Christian Institute says, we are delighted by the results. In the recent years, there have been a number of cases where overzealous police officers have unjustly interfered with the rights of Christians to express their religious beliefs on sexual ethics. Read that. Fundies surrounding a gay pride, screaming, you gotta go to hell, pretty much ruining the day. And they got hauled off by those overzealous police officers. It says, I hope the government will not try to overturn this sensible safeguard of the commons. I'm going to go into more depth about this next week, about what it's like to grow up gay in Jamaica. Speaking of the rap artists who are thrilled with the fact that we've rolled back their ability to write homophobic lyrics. We're going to talk about Jamaicans that have been mutilated, chopped up, and the policemen. You'll see. We'll actually cover the individual stories of some individuals who are growing up in Jamaica, a testimonial from a lesbian attack at work, testimonies of extortion, rape, police harassment, hairdressers beaten just because they were doing women's hair, murder, hospitals scorning gay bashing victims, laughing at them, wouldn't treat them, cops fired a crowd of gays. I mean, there's a list of testimonies here that will, you know, curl your hair up. But nonetheless, the fundamentalists in England are thrilled that the rap artists can now write even more incendiary rap songs about killing the batty man. You see, in Jamaica, we're called batty men. B-A-T-T-Y. Batty boys or batty men. I'm not sure where they got the batty part. But nonetheless, that's what they say. Also, if you'll recall the story we did a while back about the Texas church who was having a huge divide in their congregation because there happened to be a couple of gay folks that wanted to be in the church directory. And I told you about the church directory here and that, in fact, I'm photographed with Doggy in our church directory. But the Broadway Baptist Church in Fort Worth, imagine that, the same place the convention's going on, almost split the whole church up. They finally decided to publish the church directory with no pictures whatsoever. And As a result of that, the pastor has very nearly lost his job. There was a huge contingent that wanted him out of the church because he made a remark that perhaps we are not expressing the face of God to our LGBT brethren by behaving this way. And, ooh, that set off a firestorm. He barely kept his job. They voted 499 to 237 to reject an attempt to get him out. So 237 folks wanted him out for daring to tell them that perhaps they're showing the wrong face to their LGBT members. Yes, you can sit there in the pew, but you damn sure can't be in our church directory. That'd be like a brochure, don't you know? That'd be like a brochure, and we don't sell that gay stuff here. Oh, my. Tell you what, it's been a rough night with odd stuff happening, with audio here and there and disappearing streams and Lord knows what else. I appreciate you sticking with me. I'm not going to risk any more. What we're going to do is go ahead and head on over to the gay bar across the street. And again, this is by our friend Martin Verlan. You can find him at myspace.com/martmix. He is from Holland, and he was recommended to us by our dear friend Alex Atikin. He's been producing mega mixes and medleys since 95, and those DJs in Holland know how to tear it up, I got to tell you. So as we head on over to the gay bar across the street and pick up our umbrellas and our pocketbooks, prepare to be amazed.
Across the alley was the Paradise Dance Hall. Evenings in spring, they'd open all the doors and windows and the music would come outside. Sometimes they'd turn out all the lights except for a large glass sphere that hung from the ceiling. It would turn slowly about and filter the dusk with delicate rainbow colors.
Mr. Martin Verland, showing them how it's done in the Netherlands, in Holland. Got to tell you, Martin, send more of those along. Those are just fabulous, just fabulous. And you can find out more about Martin at myspace.com/martmix. We have just a couple of minutes, and I wanted to tell you this story. Contrary to the current wisdom that the only thing that the young gay folks and the lesbian folks want is sex, a new study is rattling that concept. A new study is showing that many lesbians and gay youths, much like their heterosexual peers, expect to have a long-term committed relationship and to raise families in the future. This is from the Rockaway Institute. The study questioned about 133 gay New York youths on various topics, including long-term relationships, family, adoption. And researchers found that more than 90% of the females and more than 80% of the males expected to be partnered in a monogamous relationship after the age 30. About 67% of the males and 55% of the females expressed the desire to raise children in terms of adoption. 42% of the males and 32% of the females said they were very likely to adopt. What we're seeing here, according to Rockaway, is the mainstreaming of lesbian gay youth who seem to want exactly what the heterosexual youths have always wanted, the whole American dream, complete with kids and the minivan. Lord, Lord, how times have changed. I just can't imagine what it must be like to be a gay guy and never knowing what it was like. Never knowing, even though the battle's not over. Most agree that the primary issue is whether these youths will be given the equal rights to realize the couple and family aspirations. These findings were published in the Journal of LGBT Issues and Counseling. And another quick one I want to tell you is how Don't Ask, Don't Tell got into Wells Fargo. It's not even a military. A number of shareholders are going to ask tomorrow about the board of Wells Fargo removing sexual orientation from their anti-discrimination policy. So rather than putting up a sign saying that gay is a sin, what they did is these clever little homophobes insisted that gay cannot be seen like race, and therefore you should just keep a lid on it. They say it is inappropriate and illegal for employees to discuss personal sexual matters in the job. I guess I'm married and I have a husband and three kids. That's sexual. But in any case, issues like race and age and gender and physical disabilities are impossible for anyone to discern unless a gay person brings it up. So whereas employees are not supposed to talk about these things, the issue of sexual orientation is essentially moot. So basically, the policy now at Wells Fargo is don't ask, don't tell. Just amazing. Oh, an interesting evening, an interesting day with the news of the Bush Library falling down through the cracks. Oh, the wailing and gnashing of teeth that's going on at the White House. And amongst the Cheneys and the Karl Roves, who's been planning this for years. I wonder what they're going to do. I guess I'll just have to nuke the... there's no way. It's out of the bag. I'm just blown away by this. You know, we're so used to defeats that... it's a huge victory for all of us that another covert plan by the Bush administration did not manifest itself. It did not come true. Lord have mercy. And there's still articles about the university having the Bush Library. Apparently, even some of the media doesn't even know this yet. There's still articles about the new Bush Library at SMU. Just blows me away. I should wrap things up now. Sorry about the technical difficulties. Always good to have you with us in any case, and for sticking with the Head On Radio Network. I should let you know that myself and John Fox and Bob Kincaid will be doing a horn section in just a few minutes, and Also, John will be doing his show at midnight live, so the live programming continues. And gee whiz, another evening rushed by. Here's Cynthia Manley reminding you, too.
Musician. The best music happens when the sheet music gets put aside and the gang just sits down and jams. Same thing here on The Horn, America's best liberal talk hosts free-forming together for an hour a night. Welcome to The Horn Section. Right here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice.